Joining me now is Mickey Miller, CEO of VisLink Technologies. Mickey, it's wonderful to have you on the show.
Thanks, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, Mickey, right now, if you step back and think about it for a second, we're two people in completely different locations, connected by a video control room, cloud-based control room at that. You know, that sounds like something a broadcast engineer 20 years ago might have had a panic attack about. You know, talk to me about some of the things that now are just almost unheard of from 20 years ago, specifically in the remote broadcast side.
Yeah, you're right. You know, in fact, over the last 2 years with COVID, the acceleration of remote production has been incredible, what we've seen our customers doing. And what's interesting, you know, there's always a lot of work around that. Everyone thought it was a cost reduction to do it. So cost was really driving it. But because of COVID, many people were forced into it. And what they found is pretty incredible. One, there are some cost savings, but that's really not the benefit. The benefit are really two things. One is talent. To be able to keep great talent once they're trained, you know, many young folks like yourself, when you have a family, you don't want to be on the road every weekend. And so now you can have that talent that doesn't leave the industry, stays with you, and is happy about what they're doing because they're able to drive to the office and do that. The second thing is the quality of the talent. Now you can have, you know, director, producers that are doing four events a day, as opposed to one and then getting on the road and living in hotels and airplanes for the rest of the week. So those two quality of life elements are really what we see are key drivers for some of the big players that are moving to remote production.
When we talk about cost, obviously a little bit earlier in the life cycle, the cost of a product or a cost of the technology is going to be significantly higher. So with that in mind, where are we in the life cycle of remote productions, remote tech and productions, you know, as far as a cost standpoint? Are we in the infancy? Are we, you know, in the later stages where there's large scale adoption? Where do we live there?
No, I think we're in the first inning. I think there's so much that can be done, and we see so much innovations that is continuing to happen to democratize broadcast quality productions and bring them to events that heretofore were too expensive to produce. For instance, one of our products that we have through a recent acquisition of a company called Mobile Viewpoint is what we call our IQ Sports Producer. It's an AI-driven camera. So for many of those sports that it was too expensive to send a truck out, now you can effectively go straight from the event to the cloud, produce in the cloud, and distribute however you like. And that's in the early stages. And we see that being received very well and accepted at varying ranges. So I think, you know, over time, when you look today at a lot of the lower end sports that are being live produced, the quality isn't that great. But I think we'll see that improve dramatically over time. And then we'll see, you know, at the higher end, these technologies that are being adopted quite aggressively continue to drive down the cost curve that will benefit everybody.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, obviously, you know, we go all the way down to the local sports production level, but some of the things that these schools are able to do now were incomprehensible even 5 years ago, right? You know, you've got little boxes that are going to do streaming for you, and you can switch, you can, you know, stick a camera in over Wi-Fi. There's a lot of different flexibilities there. You know, and as we're talking about some of these new innovations, the WebRTCs, the NDIs, you know, the SRTs of the world, you know, kind of technologies that feel like they started a little bit more on the outside of the production world have really made their way into the enterprise offerings. You know, talk to me a little bit about how VisLink specifically, you know, embraces some of those newer offerings and integrates them into your tools.
Yeah, I think a great example is our most recent introduction of our receiver product called Quantum, which is a native IP-based product. It's SRT capability, NDI capability, you name it. And with those standards, you're able to now take an IP platform that leverages the rest of the traditional IP network so that your entire network is a very cost-effective approach to solve whatever problem you're trying to solve. So I think in the future, we'll see just continued evolution of more IP-based technologies being at the core of everything that's done, and then leveraging the cloud, edge computing to, you know, do some pretty incredible things at the edge that heretofore the architectures weren't in place or they're too expensive to be able to do.
Well, you mentioned IP workflows, and I want to talk just a little bit about kind of something similar in that realm, but it's a little bit more the cellular workflow, right? The 5Gs, the cellular bonding. You guys are longtime advocates and users of cellular bonding tools, but let's talk 5G for a second, right? There's a couple of different applications from a 5G standpoint, whether or not that's, hey, I've got my phone, I can stream from the floor of XYZ game or in church or whatever. But there's also a much larger enterprise application where you can have localized private networks that are streaming back to your control room. You know, talk to me about what you see the future of 5G in. Obviously, very, very much in the infancy stages of the rollout there. But what are some of the opportunities really that 5G is going to allow broadcasters even in the next 2 to 3 years?
I think the interesting thing about 5G in itself is just a medium or a protocol. It's higher spectrally efficient, so you can push more through a pipe. But I think what 5G does, first for operators and for enterprises, is now you can have a cost-effective medium to be able to transmit from or to. And that's going to manifest itself in several ways. So I think at large events, you know, today, for instance, the telecom operators, the wireless operators, are all focused on the downlink. You know, so that's where the focus is. For us, it's all about uplink because we're taking action from the scene, action from the sideline, and sending it to the cloud or to the control room. And what private networks allow you to do is create these networks that are very specific to whatever your use case application are. So we see that 5G is going to be yet another medium, like we see Starlink and the LEO satellite set up. There's going to be multiple ways to connect to this cloud and then back to the control room in the cloud or the control room in an infrastructure location to be able to do the kind of things that you can do. So we look at it as just a very low cost medium that's going to be able to provide massive bandwidth. Because when you think today, broadcasters, we have limited amounts of RF frequencies that we can use to be able to get the signal back. Now there's going to be much more, and many of those are shared spectrum. So you can put it at certain events, you're going to be able to create your own private network. And I think what we see is some of the larger events will be the first ones who will be able to do this, like a race. You know, we do a lot with MotoGP. Today, that's all a proprietary network. But in the future, 5G could be, and that's who we did our first trial with at the MotoGP British Grand Prix in Silverstone. And, you know, we have over 120 cameras at that event that are wireless cameras. There's four on every bike. And MotoGP has been able to create this incredible content because they now have cameras on every bike. The last Valencia, they had a camera on the shoulder, so a shoulder cam. So much more POV type experience will be available as well. So when you think about that, now you're going to have a lot of bandwidth that you can now connect that to. So you're going to be able to have many more cameras, many more unique scenes, and creates just a lot of variety of options for those that are creating that content to be able to share with their viewers, because it's all about creating compelling, intimate content that your viewers love.
Yeah, and it feels almost obvious some of the great things that, you know, 5G in a connected spectrum will allow some of these larger broadcasters to do. I want to talk for a second a little bit more about the smaller broadcasters, right? A little bit more maybe the niche topical broadcasters or the houses of worship. You know, what are some of the applications that a smaller venue like that has, you know, in the 5G space?
I think that's where areas like that where I think we'll see disruption over time, because now you can ultimately someday on the public networks, when there's SLAs in place or service level agreements where you can guarantee I'm going to get this kind of bandwidth, this kind of latency. That's not here today because the initial 5G is focused on downlink. But over time, that will be yet another way for a variety of smaller producers to create broadcast capable content for their clients. And so, you know, it's just another tool in the toolbox for remote production to take advantage of a cost curve of a technology that's being leveraged and used across the world. And so that's where we think there's going to be tremendous opportunity, because we do many houses of worship around the world. Our AI generated, our AI assisted cameras are a great, great thing there, because you can basically create great content with fewer individuals actually involved in the capture and put those individuals on the remote production side, as well as accompanying that with cameras that are now on the shoulder, but they may connect directly to the cloud via 5G.
You talked about a longer rollout in some of those studios. You know, outside of cost and maybe just natural manpower, you know, it seems like there's in some cases a reluctance of the old guard to pass over to the newer tools, the WebRTCs, the 5G tools, NDIs, things like that. Mm-hmm. What do you think is driving that? And what would you say to somebody who's really reluctant to dive in headfirst to the AV over IP tools?
Yeah, you know, we've seen that a lot. And a lot of it is, hey, you know, what they have works great. You know, and a lot of these people are, you know, great producers of content that have had incredible success with it. And, you know, if not broke, don't fix it. But I think what we do is we really share with them the potential, the possibility, and say, hey, let's try it here. You know, let's just give this a go. And that's what we're doing, you know, with the initial 5G. We're doing a lot of 5G trials now with a lot of people that are used to different types of technologies, just to get them so they can see here's what the capabilities are. In fact, a lot of times we'll put it right up next to whatever technology they're using so they can see, oh, wow, it's just as good. And here's what that architecture looks like. And here's the benefits that it may give me. You know, at the end of the day, they're experts and they know their clients and the kind of content they're trying to create. And it's all about, you know, finding where that use case is maximized for them, putting together a plan of incrementally doing that over time. And what we found is, you know, people, when they really can see what it can do and they see the advantages of it over time, they want to be a part of it and they want to learn how it can help them in the future and be part of some of the demos that we've been doing to be able to really understand. And part of that is a lot of the more aggressive producers of content, you know, like we partnered with Dornet, MotoGP, and BT Sport. Both of those organizations are always on the bleeding edge of what's happening on the broadcast side. And they have some, you know, they're testing. Could we have an event with 30 plus cameras without any line cameras? Things like that. Can we do it completely in the cloud? You know, so they're pushing the edge there, and it'll be interesting to see how things evolve. But the initial indications are quite positive of our initial tests around 5G.
Well, you did say earlier that we were in the first inning of the rollout of really some of these remote video productions. And as we increase adoption, as we increase, you know, user functionality, things like that, what do you think the ninth inning looks like? What does the long-term and the long-term play look like in remote video production, in your professional opinion?
Yeah, I tell people, and you know, there'll be a time when Ben, your kids at a second grade soccer game will have produced content like they're doing on Monday Night Football today. It'll be so easy, so done, so perfect with all the different replays, the graphics and everything else. But then at the high end, the level of connection with the consumer, because that's what it's about for our customers. How can they get better connected with their customers, with their consumers? How can they add more value to them? How can they create content, but also do many other things to not just maybe connect with them for a Sunday afternoon, but 365 days a year? And I think that's where pulling all these technologies together, whether it's, you know, 5G or Starlink or some type of connectivity, coupled with edge computing, coupled with big data and AI, those four things together are going to create some incredible capabilities for enterprise broadcasters and people around the world.
Well, it's certainly kind of almost the Wild West, it feels like, of remote productions. But, you know, at its core, technology enables communication, right? At the end of the day, that's what any good broadcaster wants to do, is communicate effectively to their end audience. And tools that you guys are creating over at VizLink, along with some of the new protocols, really are enabling people to do that. Mickey, I appreciate you jumping on with us today. And I know our audience certainly is appreciative of you. Thanks so much for your insight.
Thank you. Great to be with you.